Thank you for being with us today. I'm glad to be back. We had a great Northeast camping trip last week. And for all who went, I hope you've gotten some rest. And from the great time we had last week up towards Salina, Ohio. I'm still not sure how to say it. But hope everyone else has had a great week. I want to say thanks to Nick for preaching last week. So appreciative of him. And you know, he steps in the space, as he said last week, about 5 or 6 times a year. We're so thankful for his voice, thankful for his family, for Meredith and his girls, and just thankful for their ministry here and just the blessing that they are to our family here at Northeast. You know, this series we've been doing called Lost, we've been going through Luke chapter 15, and so much of this is so tied together. Like each lesson is really, more than most of our series, really built on the last week. And as I 2 weeks ago covered the prodigal son and stepped into that story, and then Nick sort of finished it off last week. And when you go from 2 weeks and 2 different preachers for those 2 weeks, you realize you got to keep up with what the other person had said. And so I was listening to some of Nick's lesson last week, and he revealed to you at the beginning of the lesson that he had watched my sermon 2 weeks ago 3 times on YouTube. And all I have to say is Nick must be a glutton for pain and suffering if he listened to it for 3 times, my goodness. But appreciative of him and thankful for this story that we have to reflect on the prodigal son. And we continue today as we talk about the story of the prodigal son. And you might be thinking, well, why? We've covered the story of the prodigal son. We talked about the first son, the younger son, and we've talked about the older son, the one who stayed at home. What more is there to talk about? And the truth is, the story's far from over because we've yet to touch upon the most important character in Jesus' story. But we'll come back to that in a moment. But as we re-look at some of this story of the prodigal son, I want to change the question as we sort of re-look at some of these things. As we look at the younger son once again and the older son sort of in a summary version. We've been asking the question, what does it mean to be lost? And we said through this series that to be lost is to be disconnected from the Creator in the way of life He intended for you. And we certainly see this with the younger son as he has taken off away from home and he disconnects himself from the father. But we also see it in the older son as well, as he's out of line with the father's will. So you see different ways that we can find ourselves far from God. But I want to change the question and say, well, what does it mean then to be found as we look at the text this morning? And as we look at the text, we see here, as we start what Jesus, we pick back up into the conversation Jesus is having. And we got to look at the context one more time in this series. As we pick up from Luke 15, verses 1 through 2, as this drives the story, this drives the narrative, this drives the parables Jesus tells in Luke 15. Again, it says, now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus. A phenomenal scene. As people far from God are gathered together because they're comfortable and they want to hear a word from Jesus. It says, but the Pharisees and the teachers, the religious leader of the day, they muttered and said, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. And this wasn't the first time Jesus got this criticism. He would get this criticism over and over again as he would sit around the table with these people that the religious elite thought a respectable rabbi shouldn't be sitting with. But they saw Jesus being kind. They saw him showing hospitality. They saw him giving these quote-unquote sinners his full attention. And they couldn't grasp it. They thought he should look the other way and pretend like he didn't see them. But instead, Jesus gives them his full gaze, his full attention, his presence. And he teaches them. And they begin to learn from him. And they probably thought, well, we should be the ones learning from him. But instead, they failed to do so, and they criticize him. And Jesus, as we've been saying, uses this as a teaching example. And it says he told to them this parable. And in fact, he tells them 3 parables. We learned about a shepherd who had lost his sheep. and rejoiced when the sheep was found. We learned about a woman who had lost her coin, searched for it diligently, and she rejoiced when the coin was found. And then Jesus begins this parable, this next story, about a man with two sons. We'll start with the younger as a summation of what we talked about, and then talk about what it means for him to be found. With the younger son, we see that he demands his inheritance. Basically wishes that his father was dead, says, give me your inheritance before he's even close to being in the grave, takes off with it, and spends it. I've got to share this story because I just heard this yesterday. I couldn't believe it, the timing. It probably would have been better 2 weeks ago, but I want to share it with you. I was listening to this talk radio, and it was called Other People's Problems is the name of the segment. And part of the segment is they present a problem, and then the radio host try to help give advice to it. They give maybe humorous advice sometimes. People call in and can give advice. Well, here was the problem. So this guy, probably in his 20s, calls up and says, I've been dating this girl for 8 months, and I have yet to meet her family. And she had told me that her family was dead, like her parents had died in 2015. He said, the problem was, I was on Facebook and I saw a picture of her father from 2019 at a baseball game. And so he questions her, hey, we've been dating 8 months. I found this picture of your dad. You told me he was dead. And she continued to explain the fact that, well, actually they were dead to her. They had refused to invest in her perfume company, so she cut them off and now tells people that her parents are dead. As you would imagine, that didn't go well in this relationship. And how that played out. But it blows my mind because what we read about the younger son still happens today in a very real way, and how it actually plays out in people demanding an inheritance and then cutting their parents off, treating them as if they're dead, right? It's crazy. It's a crazy story. Can't believe that actually happens. But in another sense, it's real because we've all, as we pointed out in this series, have been the younger son to our Heavenly Father. Where we've run off with our inheritance, yeah, whether we had doubts whether or not he was real or not, maybe through our youth we doubt he existed, but we really didn't care. We just wanted to go off and to live life our own way. We've all done that in some way or other. Even if you stuck around church, we can all probably relate to the younger son at some point where we've chosen our way over the will of the Father. In some way or form, we've done that. And we've found ourselves in the position of the younger son. And when we see the younger son, ironically, what happens to him is he finds himself at rock bottom where he himself is facing death's door. As he takes his inheritance, spends it all lavishly, and then finds himself in a land in the midst of a famine that's inhospitable to him and refuses to give him what he needs because they're in the midst of famine. And they've probably seen him spend all of this money lavishly in town. And so no one's there to help him. And so he comes to his senses and decides, I'm going to go back to the father and I'm just going to beg to be a servant. Like, if he'll just receive me back, let me be a servant. You know, his servants have bread to spare. I'll be good. If I can just convince his father, my father to give me this position as his slave. And so he gets up, verse 20. He goes to his father and to his surprise, right? He's coming to his father. He's still a long way off. And the father spots him in the distance. And says, still a long way off, his father saw him, and he was filled with compassion for him, and he ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and he kissed him. And probably everybody in his household is confused. Why are you doing this? Why are you welcoming him with such open arms? And he explains, he says, for my son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So what's it mean for the younger son to be found? It means that he's reconnected with the Father. He's returned home and has returned to the Father's embrace. Has returned to relationship with the Father. That's what it looks like for the younger son to be found. To return to the Father's embrace. Not as a slave, but as a son. And then what about the younger son? What does it mean for the older son, I should say. What does it mean for the older brother to be found? Because what we see is, as Nick pointed out, we're just going to go through this real quickly to get us to our point today. But the older brother became angry when he sees that the other son has been accepted back, welcomed with open arms. It says, and the older brother became angry and refused to go into this party that the father was throwing the younger son. It says, And so he's just kind of like pouting on the outside of the banquet hall. And the father does the same thing he does for the younger son. He goes out. He meets his son where he is. He pleads with him to see, for him to have compassion and grace towards his brother. And the father says, "My son, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours." He's saying the relationship's here. Don't compare our relationship between the younger brother and with the older brother. He says, "All I have is yours. You've been here with me. Everything that I have is yours." He says, "But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And then the story ends. But as we think about what's going on here with the older brother, right, for the younger brother to be found, it's returning to the father's embrace. It's returning home. For the older brother, he had that. Right, he was home, and Nick pointed out that both brothers wanted to control the inheritance, right, and failed to conform to the father's will, and that's what I see here with the older brother, is that the big challenge for the older brother, the sin, or the way in which he is lost, is that he's out of line with the father's heart. He's out of line with the Father's will. And that's the scribes and the Pharisees, right? That they're out of line with Jesus. They see Jesus welcoming these scribes and sinners. And they're angry with him. Why are you celebrating these, not scribes and sinners, but these tax collectors and sinners? Why are you celebrating them coming to you? Why are you giving them your full attention? Why are you giving them the time of the day as a respectable rabbi? And Jesus was teaching them through this story that they were lost, now they're found. They're dead, now they're alive. This is a reason for celebration. It doesn't matter what you've done, where you've been, you're welcome. And the problem with the older brother and the Pharisees is that they failed to see the Father's heart. They failed to see the heart of God as Jesus is reflecting in this story. Failed to see how God is gracious towards all people no matter what has been the past. And so the sin of the older brother, as has been pointed out in the series, is a failure to be in line with the will of God, to be on mission with Jesus, to agree with the mission of Jesus, which is to seek and to save the lost, and all kinds of other things with pride and all of that, and Nick probably pointed out. But so what's it mean for the older brother to be found then? What's it mean for him to be found? It means to come back into relationship with God, but more than that, it means to be in line with the will of the Father, to be on mission with God, to see the world like Jesus saw it and like the Father sees it. But what's interesting in both of these scenarios with the older brother and the younger brother is that both were lost. We don't know what happens with the older brother. Jesus tells it in a provocative way because the scribes and the Pharisees haven't exactly made their decision and what they're going to do at that point. So Jesus Jesus is leaving it open to say, so what are you going to do, older brother, as he looks at the scribes and the Pharisees? And leave it up to them. And we don't know what these particular scribes and Pharisees did. We know what they did as a group later on. They took him to the cross. But as we look at the older brother and the younger brother in the story, we realize both had been disconnected from the Father, and they needed to return, however, maybe in different ways. Right? The younger son needing to return to the embrace of God, the older son needing to return to realign with the Father's will, the will of God. But what we see here in both scenarios, we see that the Father is intentionally searching them out. He puts it in their court. And it's up to them whether or not they're going to be found. The father's done what he could. He allowed the son to run off with the inheritance. He's looking for him daily, waiting to run out to him. But it's up to the younger son whether he'll be found. And the same goes with the older son as well. The older son's pouting on the outside of the banquet hall. The father comes out to him, tries to reason with him, begs him, won't you see the world like I see it? Won't you see your brother like I see it? And the father extends grace to the older son as well, and it's up to the older son whether or not he will be found. And the same goes with any of us. When we've wandered from God, God's hand is still out there reaching towards us. He puts the ball in our court. We can take that step back towards him. It's up to us whether or not we'll be found. Henry Nouwen, who we've sort of been following in this series a bit, wrote on about this. He says, the question is not, how am I to find God? But the more important question is, how am I to let myself be found by him? He says, the question is not, how am I to know God? But how am I to let myself be known by God? Open myself up to him. And finally, he says, the question is not, how am I to love God? But how am I supposed to let myself, or how am I to let myself be loved by God? And you see, we can look at that and see the story of the prodigal son all about love, right? That both sons were needing to fully understand the love of God. The younger son needing to understand that his father would still love him despite the fact he spent the inheritance. And the younger son needing to realize that the love of God was, or the older son needing to realize that the love of God was for all people, not just for those who stayed home. And the deeper we understand the love of God, the more life we experience. The more fruit we see in our lives. Everything sort of hinges on that, our understanding of God and his love for us and for all of humanity. And you might say, well, that's such a basic idea. That's Christianity 101. God loves you. Let's move on to something deeper. But I would push back on that just a bit. Because I really believe the deeper and the deeper we wade ourselves into the love of God, the more everything else sort of just falls into place. Yes, there's challenges, there's struggles, there's questions we have, there's doubts we might experience. But the more we wade in, lean in into the Father's embrace, the more strength we experience. As we're more in line with his will, we begin to develop eyes to see the world as God does. And that takes us to this, because it seems like the story is over. But as I said in the beginning of the lesson, we have yet to really focus on one more character, perhaps the most important character in the story. Because each character in the story we can relate to on some level. And I would venture to say at different points in our life, we might relate more to one than the other. I know one of the great tensions in looking at the story of the prodigal son is, you know, do I relate more to the younger son? You know, have I gone out and spent my inheritance? Or do I relate more to the older son who's kind of stuck back and kind of looks at the world in a judgmental way? Which do I relate more to? And I venture to say most of us probably can relate to both at the same time, if that's possible, right? Is the story of the prodigal son, I've heard it's been said, maybe it's not the best analogy, but it's sort of like a diamond. Sort of as you put it in the light, you get all these different kinds of glares and you see it differently depending on the light you look into it, right? And when you look at the older son and the younger son, we can see ourselves in both of those lights in different ways as we interpret this story. In some ways, we've taken the inheritance, we've run off with it as we've stepped away from God's will and just said, I'm going to live how I want to. But we can also sort of see ourselves as that older brother at times too. As we see other people spending the inheritance, we get frustrated and we become judgmental when we look at them. We look at them like the scribes and Pharisees looked at the tax collectors and sinners. We find ourselves in both of their shoes, or I should say their sandals. But we can relate to both, and that's what's important for us to realize. But it's more than that. Because ultimately, we're not trying to become more like the younger son. We're not trying to become more like the older son. But it's the other character in the story. As Sue Mosteller, a mentor of Henry Nouwen, said this. She said, whether you are the younger son or the elder son, you have to realize that you are called to become the father. Henry Nouwen continues on. As he struggled to relate, am I the younger son, am I the elder son? And he says, I am the younger son, right? We've all made those decisions to sort of go off on our own way and be the younger son. But he says, I also am the older son. I've sat in judgment of others who've tried to come to God or others who are spending the inheritance. He said, but I am on my way to becoming the father. And that's what we're left with. There's challenges, there's points in both parts of the stories. One point is we don't want to rip the inheritance away from the father and go live lavishly and spend it. Like, that hurts the heart of God. We don't want to do that. And that's a point we need to learn, and we need to learn the point we're always welcome home. We also need to learn the point, the big point from the elder brother, and that we're not to sit at judgment just because we stayed home and we've got our own internal struggles. But ultimately, where this is driving towards is that we are to become the father. Because as we see in the beginning of the parable, that's what Jesus was doing. He was the Father with the welcoming embrace to the tax collectors and the sinners, welcoming them home. And if the scribes and Pharisees sat in judgment, they were the older brother. But you're not to become just a better version of the older brother who stays at home and isn't unjudgmental. You're meant to become the Father who's able to join with God, in line with Him, and welcome the tax collectors and sinners of our time back home. And the older brothers who sit in judgment, welcome them all home to come back into in line with God's vision for the world. And you see this in the book of Luke. This isn't just an observation I'm sort of making, an observation Henry Nouwen makes, but as Chad read for us in Luke chapter 6, as it talks about loving those who do wrong to you, loving those who hate you, who persecute you. He says you can love those who love you, but how's that radical? How's that anything like the Father's love, right? Everybody loves those who love you. Everybody loves those who like you, who do what you want them to do. But it's a challenge to love those who go off and spend the inheritance. It's a challenge for those who sit in judgment and hypocritical judgment. And so what Jesus says back in Luke chapter 6, sort of setting up the trajectory for the book of Luke, he says, you must be compassionate just as your Father is compassionate. And that's what we see in the father of the story of the prodigal son, is that he's representative of the heart of God. And he's the one we're supposed to mimic. We're not a better version of the younger son. We're not a better version of the older son. We're to be the father who, as we learn to welcome all people back into Father's embrace. And we learn to embrace others also in the name of Jesus and welcome them. And so the point I want us to end with this series is this, is that we, the church of Jesus Christ on this earth, should pursue sinners and welcome them with joy when they return home. To embrace them as they come home. To embrace the younger brothers who've spent the inheritance. To embrace the elder brothers who've sat in judgment. And welcome them home. That for some reason God has entrusted us with that mission. To go and make disciples. To welcome people home who are far from God. To seek them out. And to bring them back into the Father's embrace. And to embrace them ourselves. And so we go back to the beginning of this story, in which Jesus was criticized. And they said, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. And we look at that and we say, thank God that he does. Because we're welcome home too. But the story doesn't end there. Not just that God welcomes sinners home and eats with them. But we're given a challenge to become the Father and to go and do likewise. To go out, sit with people who others don't think we should be sitting with, eating with them, giving them our fullest attention, giving them our embrace, and welcoming them home. This year at midweek, our midweek gatherings coming up on Wednesday nights, and we're going to be talking about the topic engage. The first thing coming up for our midweek gathering is going to be a kickoff meal on September 27th. This kind of we're going to have a meal. It's going to be provided for you. There'll be more. We're going to ask some to bring some, but we'll mention that in the bulletin and what to bring and all that. But the main stuff's going to be provided. But that's coming up September 27th, 6:30. And Rob Brown will be leading that, sort of talking about all that we'll be doing this year, or at least this fall, on Wednesday nights. But as we think about this topic, engage, it's exactly what we're talking about this morning. Is that this, we're going to be talking about having conversations around tables with snacks and drinks and talking about how to connect others to Jesus. How to engage the sinners, those who are far from God. And I say that with quotes because we're all in that category as we have made our journey back to God and made our journey to becoming the Father. But I wonder too, as we've called this series coming up, how to connect with others in the name of Christ, we've called this engage. But I think another word we could have used in line with the story we've shared today about the Father, the heart of the Father, is that this word could say embrace. Because that's what it means to engage lost people for Christ, is to welcome them into the embrace of the Father and to embrace them in the name of Jesus, in the name of the love of God as well. So if you're here this morning, and we've been offering the invitation a lot through this series, we're going to do it again today, is that you have an opportunity to take a step towards Jesus. Jesus is fully present with those who are far from him. Jesus is ready to receive all those who have spent the inheritance. And Jesus is ready to receive the older brother who has sat so long in judgment and resentment. And Jesus is ready to embrace those who just want to do better. And those of us who just, I want to learn more of the heart of God. I want to learn to embrace people who are far from God with love and without judgment and with kindness and this sort of sacrificial love that we see Jesus embody as he displays the heart of God to the world. Right now, you have that opportunity. Whether you want to do so publicly or you want to step into the prayer room as you exit the auditorium and sit with an elder, whichever way you want to do that this morning, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.